Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Aaron Newcomb and Randy Harper, episode 182, recorded on September 14th, 2011. PCBSD. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, Android device, or TV instantly. All stream directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit. This is Floss Weekly, episode 182. I'm Aaron Newcomb, and this week I'm joined by Randy Harper. Randy, how you doing?
Pretty good. How's it going, Aaron?
Pretty good. Pretty good. It's early here in California.
Not that it's not early
where you are as well, but it's just, it seems like for some reason, it's hard to clear my mind this morning. I don't know why. Maybe it's the fog. It's pretty foggy around here. But
this is Seattle, so it's always like that here.
It's always like that in Seattle. That's right. Anyway, we've got a great show today. Actually, we're going to be talking about PCBSD, which is a distribution of BSD that actually is a little bit more user-friendly, I guess. We'll find out a little bit more about that. But I know that it's gaining in popularity, and it's easy to install and things like that. So we're going to be talking about PCBSD. And Randy, that's why you're here today, being our resident BSD expert. Have you ever used PCBSD?
I have. It's been a couple years, mostly because I'm running Windows for gaming right now. But yeah, I really liked it whenever I was using it.
Cool. Well, I'm pretty excited about it. It does. BSD is not my area of expertise. I've tried running FreeBSD. I've done some installs on routers and equipment and things like that. Various ports of BSD. So, but I don't use it on a daily basis. So I'm actually pretty excited to take a look at that. So we're going to bring on our guest, Chris Moore, and he's actually the primary developer, I think, of PCBSD. We're going to bring him on in just a minute. Before we do that, though, we need to mention our sponsor, which is Netflix. And this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Netflix. Netflix streams thousands of TV episodes and movies directly to you instantly, which saves you time, money, and hassle, especially the hassle. There are several ways to instantly access streaming movies and TV shows with Netflix. You can watch Netflix movies and TV shows on your Mac or PC or iPad or Android device. In fact, they just recently offered additional versions of Android, the lesser versions, so to speak. If you have an old Android phone, you may be able to watch Android on your Android phone now. So check that out. If you have a gaming console like an Xbox 360, a PS3, a Nintendo Wii, you can watch Netflix right on your TV. Even if you're not a gamer, either with an Apple TV or a Roku box, which are inexpensive, easy to install, and an easy way to watch Netflix. So you can watch Netflix and TV shows instantly using any of these devices, and you can begin watching a movie or show on one device and then finish on a different one. Which is a really cool feature. I love watching something on my phone, like on an airplane on the way home. You start a movie, and then actually when you get home, you can actually finish it, which is really nice. It picks up right where you left off. Whichever way you want to choose to access Netflix, you can watch as many movies and TV shows as you want, anytime you want, and you can cancel anytime. So if you want to get into Netflix, if you're not into Netflix yet, this is the way to get started. You can go try Netflix today for 30 days free. Just go to netflix.com/twit and be sure to use that URL, the /twit, when you sign up for your free trial. And we thank Netflix for their support of Twit, and we hope you enjoy watching instantly with Netflix. And now, let's go ahead and bring on our guest. All right, so Chris Moore, are you with us?
I am with you.
Chris, nice to have you with us on Floss Weekly. Chris, why don't you introduce yourself real quick so that everyone knows what your role is?
Okay. As you said, Chris Moore. I am the founder of PCBSD and currently the lead developer for the project. All-around BSD nut, desktops, etc. Just enjoyed making this all work.
Good. So how long has PCBSD been in existence? What's the history of PCBSD? How did it get started?
Well, it's been around almost 6 years now. I guess 2005 is when we got the start. Started as a FreeBSD-based desktop. We just ran KDE on it for a while. Just decided to take FreeBSD and add some features that I felt would turn it into a viable desktop. And out of that, PCBSD was born. And here we are 6 years later with just a ton more features than I ever imagined happening.
So is this technically a fork of FreeBSD? Is it considered a fork?
No, not at all. It's FreeBSD through and through. It's 100% FreeBSD under the hood. We're not modifying their source tree at all. That's something I always try to explain to Linux folks coming over, think that we're a fork. Anything you see that applies to FreeBSD will apply to PCBSD. We take FreeBSD and just turn it into the desktop, which is all the graphical bells and whistles, GUI installers, tools, utilities, etc. Things that you just don't normally have out of box on a FreeBSD system.
Okay. So it'd be kind of like you could compare it to Ubuntu or one of the Linux desktops in that it's not a Linux fork. It's not a Linux kernel fork. It's just that it's a distro on top window dressing sort of on top of the FreeBSD layer.
Okay. Correct. That would be a more appropriate description. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, and I'm going to be throwing these out since I'm not I'm mostly a Linux user and not a BSD user, which is why we have Randy here. I'm going to try to hopefully, you know, throw out some questions that'll bridge that gap between Linux and BSD for those that aren't as familiar. So great. So how many people are involved with PCBSD at this point?
Well, from the development side, probably 5 to 6 active developers submitting a lot of bugs, code fixes, etc. I work on it full time, so I'm the one probably committing the bulk of the changes at the moment. Although we have several other employees down at IX Systems who are now committing changes and improving the system as well, plus some volunteers who've done some great work with the upcoming 9 series.
So is this primarily for desktop users? Is that who you would say would be the target audience for this distribution, or would it be or could you run it on servers? Does it do, I'm assuming since it's FreeBSD in the background, it does perfectly fine on a server as well.
Oh yeah. I mean, we've had people just load PCBSD up and then fire up Apache and run it as a web server. I mean, it does all the same stuff that FreeBSD does. So if you want to set it up as a router or gateway or web server, file server, etc. I mean, it's all right there. Although primarily we're aimed at the desktop. So we try to provide what a desktop user would expect out of box, an easy to use installer that customizes and sets up the system with a few clicks, and then a working pretty desktop that just shows up when you log in and gets you right on the net surfing and playing and doing, you know, work without all the messy bits normally it would take to set up FreeBSD with a desktop.
Right. And is there a lot of additional overhead because you're adding the graphical elements in? I mean, you know, is there a reason why you wouldn't choose this particular? I mean, obviously, if you're installing it on a router, I'm guessing that just the size, just the graphic elements alone
probably add a bunch of bulk. I wouldn't install it on a router. I'm thinking more of the case where some guy has an old desktop in his house that he wants to set up as a router, etc., and just feels more comfortable from a GUI, and you know, installing FreeBSD by itself might be a bit scary. So some people get away with using ours instead just because it's easier and they don't care so much about the hit and performance or package size.
Right. And so that's kind of the difference between FreeBSD and PCBSD. Why would a Linux user like me choose PCBSD? I mean, is that one of the goals here, is to make it a little bit easier for people that are used to Windows or a graphical Linux environment to maybe try BSD?
Correct. Yeah, we'd like to think we can bring in Windows users, Mac users, and Linux users who are maybe excited about some of the features that we have under the hood with FreeBSD, such as ZFS. Maybe they like our custom package installer, the way we do that whole arena package management. The focus would be the desktop users. Just bringing anybody in wants an easy-to-use desktop that just gets them off the ground and running with minimal fuss and headache, and the speed and security and everything that FreeBSD offers.
So, I mean, maybe explain a little bit of that for people that are used to Windows or Linux, if you can. I mean, you know, you mentioned speed, for example. I mean, what are the reasons that somebody would go with BSD, or what's the history behind it as compared to Linux? I mean, Windows, I think most people are familiar with Bill Gates and all that. Linux, maybe, you know, not so much, or a little bit. But I think BSD is a little bit more obscure than mm-hmm. Linux and Windows. So maybe, you know, what's the history of BSD? You know, when did free BSD come about? If you're familiar with that, it might be a really good overview for our listeners who may not be as familiar with those details.
Well, I can give you a little bit of a brief overview. To be honest, a lot of these things happened before my time even. So I've been using FreeBSD since we were at the 4 series. But originally it started as an AT&T Unix, went to Berkeley Labs, and out of there BSD was born. And since then we've had forked OpenBSD, NetBSD, FreeBSD, DragonFlyBSD. And then we were born after that as a desktop version of one of those 4. As far as speed goes, it's currently a very active platform being used all over the internet. Odds are you're talking to a FreeBSD web server somewhere in your browser right now. So, I mean, it's got that legacy and history, which has translated actually really well to desktop usage in our case.
Right. And there's also license differences as well. Mm-hmm. You want to mention that?
Sure. And that, you know, this can be a sticky issue depending on which side of the coin you fall under. The BSD license, if you just go Google it, look it up on the FreeBSD or PCBSD page, you'll see it's just one little blurb of text. It's a small two-clause license, which basically says, hey, here it is. It's free. Please respect and keep our copyright in the docs here somewhere. And don't sue us if something goes wrong. So it's very business-friendly. It's user-friendly in the sense that we place no burdens on anybody for using it, essentially. They're free to use it and do with it as they will.
Right. And I mean, one more aspect of this, and again, mm-hmm. you know, recognizing that you're probably not the expert on this, but just to bring it up because a lot of people mm-hmm. will be aware or maybe have heard about this is in terms of Apple and what they've done. Mm-hmm. Can you touch on that as well? I mean, when I first heard about PCBSD, I made a joke that it was kind of like what Apple did, you know, in a way, right? I mean, but maybe touch on that a little bit, you know, in terms of what Apple's doing, and this gets back to the licensing issue of why Apple could build on BSD as opposed to Linux. But go ahead.
Well, they were able to take some of the FreeBSD base system and close source it and turn it into what is Mac 10 nowadays. We're doing some of the same, except we're not closed sourcing anything. We're keeping it all true BSD licensed, releasing all the source, and not planning on ever going that route. But the license does offer freedom. Some people say BSD is the best known secret out there because there's a lot of BSD code running in a lot of closed source applications on devices that you would never guess it's there. I mean, somebody posted about a Panasonic TV the other day that is running BSD under the hood, but it gets used in a lot of places and they don't have to mention anything about it because it is able to be closed source. The license offers much freedom in dealing with the software.
So for your installer, you're not actually, or you're using something that is GPL licensed. Aren't you guys using Qt?
We use Qt, yes. We use GPL license code. I mean, obviously, we're running all the same open source software you're going to see on Linux. So Firefox is not BSD licensed, neither is KDE, etc. For the installer, all the backend's written in BSD licensed code, so you could do the full install without the Qt, but the Qt front-end, yes, is the Qt portion of it is GPL, but the code that we write is BSD licensed, which is okay to do with Qt.
So you mentioned the window manager being KDE. I've been kind of curious about this for a while. Why did you guys choose KDE over something like GNOME?
Well, I'm a Qt developer, first of all, so that kind of makes the choice easy for me.
That explains it.
Yeah, definitely. And I live in the C++ object world, and that's my thing. But I also felt like KDE was the easiest for me to sit down a Windows user or a Mac user, bring them to my system, set them down, and go, okay, be productive on this and use it. And I felt like the learning curve was very minimal in that respect. GNOME was a little different. But we'll talk about this, I'm sure, here in a bit. But in 9, we've changed that. So we are no longer KDE-centric. We support GNOME, KDE, LXDE, XFCE, and a variety of other smaller window managers. Just we're trying to go the freedom route, giving everyone the choice of what they want to use. Although I still would recommend KDE for, you know, mom moving over from a Windows system who just wants to click some icons and get on the net and expect it to look pretty.
I've actually seen KDE mistaken for Windows before, so that doesn't really surprise me.
Yeah, so you could see what the thinking was when we made that choice, yeah.
Especially how you guys make it so easy to run Windows executables. So with the Wine configuration, I mean, what other configurations do you, or what other modifications have you made that, you know, improve this experience, such as the Wine executable stuff?
Little touches like that. With our package manager, we have a little bit more freedom for registering things like MIME types, etc. So with the Wine package, you install it, it registers .exe files and some other ones to Wine, and a Windows user just comes, clicks an .exe, and it runs just like you would expect on Windows. So we try to go that extra mile and just make things easy, polished, so that people coming over aren't immediately frightened by the command prompt. I mean, obviously, I'd like to get to the point where any Windows user could come over, run the desktop, be happy with it, and not realize they're actually learning how to use BSD and learning how to use open source in general. And then maybe someday they start digging down a bit, and we've become the gateway for them to enter this whole open source world.
So you talked about how the version number is PCBSD 9. It, does that compared to FreeBSD 9? I mean, are you matching up the version numbers?
Yeah, a while back, back in the early days, we had separate version numbers. But when we moved to the 7 series, we changed our version numbering so that PCBSD 7.0 is based on FreeBSD 7.0, 8.0, 8.0, 9.0, 9.0, etc. So you can just look at it and go, okay, I'm running FreeBSD 9.1, but it's PCBSD with all our desktop on top.
Do you have a current branch?
Yes, we do.
Oh,
it's
cool.
currently we're working on that, turning that into 9.0.
Okay, awesome. So I know that a lot of contributions have been made back to FreeBSD from the PCBSD project. Like, you guys are one of the driving forces in getting 64-bit NVIDIA drivers working on FreeBSD, which was awesome. I was so happy about that.
Kind of needed that. That was pretty critical.
Yeah, when you're trying to push a desktop operating system, 64-bit NVIDIA, kind of important. What other contributions have you made to FreeBSD?
Well, recently, with the 9 and the 8 series, we introduced a brand new system installer backend, which is now in FreeBSD head. It's not the default yet for 9.0, but the goal is eventually to switch it to the PC sysinstall backend, which supports all the fancy ZFS, geometry, encryption, glabel. I mean, all these nice little features that we think people are going to want to use to install FreeBSD and PCBSD.
Okay. Do you have a lot of people that are developers for both PCBSD and FreeBSD contributing to both?
We got a handful of them. Several of the FreeBSD developers, usually they run it and submit bug reports to me or somebody else saying, hey, I'm trying to do this on my desktop. It doesn't work. But then we can turn around and say, oh, this is broken in FreeBSD. Could you please fix this? And usually with enough prodding, we can get stuff done. It's worked out pretty well.
So what different architectures does PCBSD support? I mean, do you follow all the same ones that FreeBSD has, or are you limiting it somewhat?
No, we're limiting it. It's i386 and AMD 64 for the desktop. Although I am keeping my eyes open at possibly doing an ARM port at some point. Now that we've added some touchscreen support in for 9, I think it would be kind of cool to see it running on a tablet down the road.
Oh, wow. That would be kind of neat. I got to wonder how exactly the installer would work with a tablet and, you know, touchscreen interfaces with X and all of that.
Yeah, well, I've added for the upcoming 9.0, it auto-detects touchscreens now, and in the desktop side of it, it just pops it down on the tray. You got your little keyboard you can bring up and go ahead and do everything without a keyboard. Part of what I'm going to be doing in 9.1 is probably rewriting some of the installer to support a virtual keyboard so we can do a complete install from beginning to end without ever touching a physical keyboard and mouse.
Cool.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
I just downloaded the live DVD, so I'm actually running that on in VirtualBox right now. So it looks cool. This is actually PCBSD 9, the beta of 9. Speaking of that, what's new in 9? I mean, what kind of changes are we going to see between 8 and 9?
What hasn't changed? That's the bigger question. It's honestly, almost everything has changed. The historical roots of PCBSD is we have been KDE 4 centric, and all of our tools and such were written in Qt with KDE 4 library support. So when we approached 9, one of the decisions I made was we need to separate that out a bit and start supporting GNOME, start supporting, you know, LXDE, all these other great window managers, which people have good reasons for wanting to run. I don't want to force a FreeBSD guy or a Linux guy coming over to run just KDE. It would be nice if they could run whatever they wanted to and switch back and forth worth depending on what their needs are on a day-to-day basis. So the first thing we had to do was go and separate all of our tool chain out, and now it's running in pure Qt. There's no KDE4 entanglement, so we can install the system with just GNOME or just LXDE or XFCE or Fluxbox, for that matter, whatever it is you particularly want to run. And so that was the first big change. All of our tool chain's been updated to support that. Second big change is our package management's undergone a complete overhaul, and I'll be willing to discuss a little bit of that. We'd have to get into some detail about how that works and the philosophy behind it. But in 9, the biggest change you're going to see out of box is during the install. You get the option to pick whatever window managers you want now. Click it, it does the install, and you're good to go.
Yeah, I'm just playing with it here. I mean, it looks, I know it's beta, but it actually looks, you know, fully functional. That's for sure.
We've gone through a lot of work to get it this far.
Yeah. So this is actually GNOME then, right?
The live DVD is actually KDE.
Oh, it is. I was going to say there's some KDE icons there. Yeah, I see them now. Yeah. So yeah, very interesting. It's hard to tell with GNOME anymore. There's been so many changes.
They're both shiny. I mean, what more do you want?
Right. No, it looks really good. So when do you think version 9, I mean, do you have a goal set for when 9 will be publicly available?
Because we follow the FreeBSD releases, we're tied to when FreeBSD 9.0 hits. And they just released beta 2 last week. We released our beta 2 yesterday. So I'm hearing maybe a month or so. It could be a little more. .0 releases tend to slip a bit as they, you know, find and fix last-minute bugs from all the major changes. So I'm hoping end of October, maybe early November, we can come out PCBSD 9.0. Good rule of thumb is just to watch the FreeBSD site. When they tag their .0 release, we'll be out usually a few days after.
Oh, that's cool. Mm-hmm. That's cool. So is this sort of, I mean, I noticed the numbers, it doesn't seem like they align quite to FreeBSD. Is that?
No, they do. So PCBSD 9.0 will be based on FreeBSD 9.0. If you looked at the last beta, we did a beta 1.5, which was just for some bug fixes that we internally did. It was still running FreeBSD beta 1. But for the releases, it will be a 9.0.
Okay. Cool. Mm-hmm. So what kind of, I mean, are you actively looking for help with PCBSD?
Oh, of course.
What kind of things are most important right now in terms of, I mean, there's got to be a couple of big things that are like, oh, if I just knew someone that understood, you know, NVIDIA drivers, my life would be great. I mean, what kind of things are you looking for?
Well, two areas I guess I'd say that we could really use the help in. First would be Qt developers, people who can come in, look at our tools and understand our code base and say, hey, I can improve this to add support for X or whatever. The second thing we could always use help in is people who understand C really well and FreeBSD. That way we can go to them and say, you know, I'd really like that touchscreen driver working, or, you know, we really could use this NIC working, et cetera. Especially people who can write drivers. That's kind of the Achilles heel at the moment. FreeBSD sometimes tends to lag a little bit behind Linux as far as driver support. And so the more people we can attract who can go in and say, okay, I'm adding support for that NIC or that sound card or whatever it is, that benefits everyone.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I know that must be pretty difficult. I mean, I always say, look, you don't have to know how to write drivers. You don't have to know how to write code. You can always do documentation. But the truth is, you got to have those people that can do the driver part too. And those people are few and far between. Or they're already tapped with other, you know, mm-hmm. doing other things for other distros. So,
well, you know, real life gets in the way too. A lot of these guys have full-time jobs. And so it's kind of a as time permits thing. But, you know, as you mentioned, documentation is a great example. You don't have to be a developer to get involved. If you just want to do docs, the way our package management works, we do hand testing of everything to make sure that apps that we release actually pass the smell test and work and, you know, do what they're expected to do. So, I mean, people get involved just testing applications, sending us bug reports, and that can be, you know, great help as well.
Right. So I'm assuming the best place to go to look for information is what we're showing right now underneath your name, which is PCBSD.org, correct?
Correct. PCBSD.org will lead you to all the mailing lists. Forums are a good place to get started. We have a great wiki page set up. Drew Levine, FreeBSD book author, is helping us with that, and she's our community manager now. It came on recently this last year. She's doing a great job of organizing the community and kind of collating all these documents into one place on the wiki and just, you know, providing a great handbook for people getting started or getting plugged into the project.
Yeah, I noticed it's very well organized. I mean, I was looking at the website when I was going to download the live DVD, And I mean, it looks great. It's very well organized, easy to find things. I mean, that's always critical. I know people don't, people underestimate the importance of that. I mean, that's the first place people go. People that listen to this show are going to be like, oh, PCBSD, I'll go check it out. So it's the first place that people will go to kind of interface with whatever your project is. And I think a lot of times it's underestimated. I mean, if you land at a Google code page for a basic user, they're like, what? Huh? I don't understand. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it really is important. And you guys have done a really good job. So kudos
Well, thank
on that.
You. That's not just me. That's most of the guys down at IX. We got some great web developers, some great UI guys and graphic designers who have just done all fabulous work, as you've seen on the site. And that is important, like you said. You can't expect everyone to know to just navigate to some FTP server. Oh, grab the image off of there. That just doesn't work for your typical Windows user. And there's a lot of Linux desktop users now don't expect that either.
So you've mentioned the packages a couple of times now, and I gather you're not talking about FreeBSD ports. So you want to explain how the package management works?
Sure. Okay. Well, first of all, there's two ways we do packages in FreeBSD. The first thing we support is what FreeBSD does, the package system. So that can be built from building packages from source or binary packages with package add. That's more your typical open source, you know, Linux-y type distro package management system where it resolves all the dependencies. That's what you're used to if you're coming from a Linux world. In addition to that, though, on PCBSD, what I felt was a critical component of making this a viable solution for Windows users and Mac users coming over, we invented a system called a PBI, which stands for Push Button Installer. And it is a self-contained package format, which eliminates the dependency problem. Essentially, you download a single package for Firefox, load it up, all its files stay in one directory. They don't mess with the rest of your system. You can run conflicting versions of libraries. Just a lot of neat features, and it reduces the headache for users who just want to download and go. You know, if you had your Android phone, for example, and had to download Firefox, oh, well, it's got to update 32 other packages on the system. You can see that would kind of be a pain. We're trying to eliminate that and go the other model where it's just simple, point and click, you know, just works.
So if two different packages have the same library, isn't that going to take up twice as much space?
It could. And in the 8 series, that was a problem we had. One of the things we've done with the rewrite for 9 is we've made this much more intelligent and smarter. So, for example, on 9, you download a PBI Firefox and then download, say, Thunderbird. They both have GTK libraries, and both those would be included in the installation package. Well, now the package management backend is smart enough to look at those and go, oh, hey, I got identical libraries here. I can share them with a fancy system of hard links and something we call the hashter, which actually contains the libraries. We can look at that hard link to identical copies. And the beauty of it is when you have a copy that's not identical, say there's a slightly different revision or a library that's got some changes in it, we're able to create a second copy of that and use it for the applications that need that. And it's all intelligent in the background. So when you remove apps, it knows, okay, this library's been orphaned. We don't need it anymore. It can nuke it off the system. So we're saving disk space during the install, and then we're saving runtime space when you're actually executing the packages because we only need to load one copy of that library into memory.
Oh, cool. So I was just going to ask a question. I forgot what it was. Oh, sorry, early in the morning. Can FreeBSD ports be installed alongside PBIs? I mean, how do those coexist together?
Correct. Well, the way PCBSD is built is essentially the way you would build a typical FreeBSD desktop. The PCBSD desktop is installed with FreeBSD ports and packages. So after you install, if you're used to FreeBSD, you go drop down and do the package info command, and you'll see all your KDE or GNOME or whatever packages there. And you can tweak those if you want. We recommend people leave them alone. That way we can do upgrades of those packages and know what's going to be there. But in addition to that, we offer a feature called the port jail. Users who aren't familiar with FreeBSD, let me explain that they have a system called jails on FreeBSD, which is essentially a fancy cheroot environment. It virtualizes the network stack, and you can give it an IP address, and it's a way of keeping stuff separate in its own container. A lot of FreeBSD web servers will run Apache in that jail, for example, and maybe you'll have 100 of them running on a single system. Well, what we've done is we've adapted that jails feature in PCBSD to provide something called the port jail, which is a clean environment. So you can log into it. There's nothing installed, no packages. You can then go ahead and package add Firefox or build something from source and maintain an entire package tree with dependencies and everything, just like you would on a regular FreeBSD box. You can run these graphical applications right out of the jail, and they just work transparently. And the beauty of it is it's self-contained. It stays away from your desktop. So you're not going to run the risk of breaking your GNOME install or having to rip out a part of KDE and upgrade all these other things just to play around with a package inside the jail.
Well, that can be really powerful, especially, I mean, even for power users. I'm assuming that's who it's built for. I mean,
yeah,
that can be really helpful. I know there's been a number of times when I've royally messed things up on my Linux desktop just because I'm a tinkerer. I like to go in and, sure. and try to get things to work, and I build something or, you know, things like that. So it's really not, it's a really good feature to have just to keep, you know, kind of keep things separate.
Well, look at it from the developer standpoint, too. If you're going to be building some experimental package, you know, doing some test things on there, you can roll it all separately in this nice little jail, test it out, and never touch your live system and worry about, you know, ruining your weekend by trying to fix what you broke on Friday night, you know, at 2 a.m. So it is a pretty cool feature. The nice thing is with jails, you can set up a whole bunch of them. When you're done, you just delete it. It's gone. But you're not running the risk of breaking anything, and those are preserved across upgrades. So when we release, say, PCBSD 9.1 and come out with a new GNOME version, we can install that, but your stuff you have installed in the jail doesn't get touched and can happily coexist.
Well, that's the next question I was going to ask, actually. It's a question from the chat room, which is, do you support rolling upgrades? When I go from 8 to 9, can I just upgrade my current system?
Starting in 9.0, you'll be able to do that. The 8 series, we're not supporting that feature just because so much has changed. Packages, everything has changed from 8 to 9. But starting in 9.0, and you can already do this in the beta. So say you install beta 2.0 or beta 2, excuse me, and then we come out with RC1, you will be able to, via the update manager, download the new packages, download the kernel and world environment. It'll apply them, reboot, and you're back up to the new version of PCBSD. So you should be able to use that to go from 9.0 to 9.1 to 9.2 and then possibly even into 10. Although I'm still looking into that just because sometimes there are pretty big differences between the major releases, but at least across the minor point revisions, you'll be able to upgrade for several years this matter.
Oh, that's good. I mean, when you said that there was a lot of changes in 9, you weren't kidding, were you?
Oh, no, not at all. I literally mean just about every bit of code has been touched in some way.
Wow. So another question I had was in terms of ZFS. I mean, you mentioned the jail feature. Does that use ZFS in order to keep those things separate? Or is there a way to – but ZFS is built into the kernel, right, because it's based on FreeBSD. So you can use ZFS. I'm just kind of curious whether you've thought about adding any features that use ZFS into the desktop. I know that because I came from Sun to Oracle, so I used to work a little bit with the ZFS team. I know that they had built some backup features and so to speak into the operating system, and it was based on ZFS. I was just curious if you were planning on doing anything like that.
Yeah, the port jail doesn't necessarily use that. That'll run on UFS, and we don't need any ZFS specific feature to do that. But that is something that has come up and will probably be appearing maybe 9.1, possibly 9.2, depending on how much we want to, you know, bite off and try and get done. But the plan is to try and release some kind of graphical utility which manages ZFS, maybe your snapshots, doing backups, etc. At the moment, we include a tool called Life Preserver straight out of box, which is a little tray app that lets you back up all your user data to an offsite rsync server, anything running SSH and rsync. And so that'll work both on UFS and ZFS, but the plan is to add something more specific to take advantage of these powerful ZFS features. Part of the reason I haven't done it just yet is because not everyone's using ZFS on a desktop. It really is kind of a heavier file system. AMD 64 is what we recommend people use for it. So we're trying to get the things which can apply to everybody first before we go and tackle a specific ZFS feature. But that is in the works, and we do plan on adding that soon.
Oh, good. That's good to know. So a couple more questions. I mean, usually we ask the license question. I think we can pretty much skip that, although it does sound like, you know, there are some features that use or some added on things that use GPL. Is there anything else that we need to know about in terms of licenses that might be different from the straight up BSD?
No, not particularly. Anything in our code tree is going to be BSD licensed. That's all the code we write, all the code we release is BSD licensed. Naturally, when you install the desktop, you have have some different license things a part of that. So like I said, KDE is GPL. Maybe you have an NVIDIA driver, Flash, et cetera. Those are all parts of it, but that's not necessarily our code. And we're just kind of shipping that as is.
Right. So that would be the same pretty much as any other. Even yeah, Linux distros are the same. I mean, they try to come, or some of them try to come, you know, free out of the box, so to speak. Free as in freedom.
No closed source.
No closed source, yeah. Exactly. But then you add on things like NVIDIA drivers and so forth, and then you've added some yeah. tainted
yeah. Well, you know, my philosophy has just been whatever works. You know, a lot of people just want to install it. They just want the graphics to work. They just want to be able to go and watch a Flash video on a site. So we're going to make all those things available. And if you don't want them, you can feel free to turn them off and not install those features. That's perfectly fine by me. But there's a ton of people out there who just need the desktop to work. And, you know, eventually when the open source packages get to the point where they can replace those, I'm all for it.
Great. I'm seeing in the chat room that there's a lot of people that are actually installing this right now, trying it out. And, you know, most things are working. There's a lot of questions, though, from users about, desktop, like things like Flash, getting Flash to work so you can do things like Dropbox or YouTube, things like that.
Sure.
How difficult for a new, I don't want to say that word, how difficult is it for a light user, let's call them, to get those kinds of things up and running? Are they going to be able to do that? Are there tutorials to help them get started? I'm just trying to think, you know.
Shouldn't even need one, to tell you the truth. Flash is going to be included out of box. In beta 2, we found an issue right before release where Flash wasn't turned on by default. If you go to blog.pcbsd.org and just read the release announcement under the known issue section, there's one command you run which enables the Flash plugin. It's just got to build the wrapper and you're good to go.
Okay.
And that'll be on for 9.0 when we release. Flash will just work out of box. That's been something we've always done on PCBSD.
Yeah, that's great, because I know that's a pretty big barrier to entry to some people, is that, you know, they try it maybe real quickly and things don't work the way that they're used to.
Sure.
And since more and more things are going to the cloud, even documents and things like that in Google Documents, I mean, it seems like everything's getting pushed up to the cloud. That kind of stuff is getting really, really important for people to make sure that it works.
So and like I said, our goal is to make it easy to use. So same goes with the NVIDIA driver. We don't make you jump through any hoops even on this current beta for the NVIDIA driver. You just install the system, make sure you've checked it on the additional packages. If you're running NVIDIA, it'll actually auto detect and select it for you, so you don't even have to remember and go back and do that. And then when you boot up, select NVIDIA, it'll try and auto-detect it again for you, and you're good to go. There's no additional hoops you have to jump through to set something like that up.
Right. What about things like installing on netbooks? You know, is there, if you have a laptop or something that doesn't have a CD-ROM, I'm assuming there's USB thumb drives
correct.
You can use to boot up, correct?
On the download page, there's some links to a couple USB images there. We even have some lighter images available on our FTP server, which we'll put up after we're past the beta status. Those all go on the download page. But for the moment, we have a couple DVDs, you know, an install DVD, a live DVD, a USB image, and a USB light image, I believe, may be up there. Although if it's not, it'll be up there soon. And the light images, for example, you mentioned a netbook. So I have a netbook, which is a slower Atom processor. So I just download the USB light image, which comes preloaded with LXDE on it. It runs great, and then I can go into the system manager post install and say, oh, by the way, put KDE on it too.
Right. And then what about installing on BSD's always, I mean, from what I've heard, been historically good about this, but installing on other types of devices like Intel MacBooks, things like that, I'm assuming that that's no problem, correct?
Actually, the MacBook is a little difficult at the moment. We do not support it out of box yet. That is something I want to get done for 9.0, assuming I have the time to finish it up. Their GPT MBR partitioning is a little hairy to navigate. So that is something that we will be doing down the road. You can do it. There's ways to go in manually and force it, but I'm hoping just to get it where it just detects it during the installer and does it for you.
Okay, good. Good to know, because I've got, on my MacBook, I typically run Linux, but I've got, Mac OS still on there. It's probably way out of date because I never boot up into it. And then I've got Windows to run some games, and then I've got Linux. It'd be nice to add BSD to the mix as well.
Definitely, and that's something I plan on adding here soon. We keep getting more and more requests for it, so it'll undoubtedly be coming down the road.
Okay, great. Well, usually at this point in the program, we ask the VI versus Emacs question. I'm not sure if that applies to you or not. Do you have a preference in terms of a text editor?
VI all the way.
Ah, there we go.
I do all my developments done in VI.
Awesome.
Not even VIM, man. Hardcore VI.
Oh, you're old school.
Yeah, definitely. That's what I learned.
I always use VIM because VIM was new when I was starting in Linux. Sure. And everybody was, oh, it's so much easier. So I started with that. So I'm VIM. Sounds like Randy, you're VI as well, right?
Absolutely. I started using Vim, but then with default FreeBSD installs, it's not installed. You had to like wait forever for it to compile. So I finally trained my fingers to just type VI instead of VIM. It took forever.
Oh, it's the only way to go. Who needs all this pretty colors in your text there? I mean, come on.
I like pretty colors. Oh, what's wrong with pretty colors?
Just look at Randy's hair. Come on.
Oh, true.
Hey, Randy, I'm about ready to wrap up here. Any more questions before we finish up?
There was a question from IRC about how PCBSD compares to what we believe is now dead desktop BSD.
Well, desktop BSD, last I heard, is defunct now. They were still based on KDE4, and I don't know if they have any plans on reviving that and doing the multiple window manager thing like we are. But yeah, I'm not an expert on their project, so you'd probably have to go take a look at their site to find out more about what they're doing.
All right, cool. That's all I have.
Great. All right. Well, Chris, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a real, real privilege to have you on and talk about this. I mean, I like I said, to be honest, I haven't tried it until just now. It's running in VirtualBox on my MacBook, and it seems to be working fine. So I intend to play around with this quite a bit more today, well, later on. So this has been really interesting. So thanks for coming on.
This is my pleasure to be here. I just appreciate the opportunity, and thank you guys for the awesome show.
Sure. And besides PCBSD, any other place that people should look for updates? DistroWatch or anything like that? I mean, is there anything?
Yeah, DistroWatch. You can always follow DistroWatch. They're usually a day behind, if even that. So it's not a problem. Just check out our wiki page. Our forums are very active. So if you have a question, usually just hit there and you'll find an answer.
Great. Good to know. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks a lot, Chris.
Thank you guys very much.
All right. Have a good one.
You too.
All right. So Randy, you are the BSD expert here out of the two of us. So what do you think?
I've actually used PCBSD before. Admittedly, it's been like a year or two. I do remember it was really easy to install. There are a few small things I didn't like about it, but they've changed it since then to get rid of those problems. I'm just a stickler for file systems, and they had stuff in weird places. But yeah, other than that, PCBSD is awesome. People should try it, especially if they want to kind of dig into the world of FreeBSD, but they're new to it and kind of scared of FreeBSD's installer, which I'll admit is kind of intimidating.
Yeah, and that's certainly been the intimidation for me. But to be honest, it looks like with the live CDs and the graphical user interface and all the improvements that they've made on top of FreeBSD, it really does make it looks like anyway. It's easier, much easier for someone newer to BSD to at least start using BSD.
Well, someone new to Unix at all could just pick this up and start going with it. My mom has installed it before, and she had no problems at all.
Awesome. That's a good testimonial. That's what I always used to. If your mom can do it, then she should be in good shape. But great. So, the other thing I like about it is, and I like this about a lot of different open source projects, is whenever you can bring new users in, and kind of get them involved in an open source project, maybe they don't even care that it's open source at first, like Chris was saying, and I think the same way is true about a lot of things. Certainly something like Ubuntu, other projects like Firefox, something to get folks involved. And then later on, as they get more and more interested in it, they figure out, hey, this is actually open source, and there's a good reason to support this kind of project going forward. It's one of the things that I think is missing in some projects like Android, and we could start the whole open source debate around Android. I don't want to do that, but my point is that I think sometimes with things like Android, it's so obfuscated, the fact that they're using a Linux kernel, that they're using open source code behind the scenes, that sometimes there's no way for people to figure out. They understand it's open in terms of comparison to Apple, but they may not understand the open source component.
So one time I was told by someone in FreeBSD that one of the biggest intimidating factors for people getting involved in larger open source projects like Linux or BSD is that there's not much low-hanging fruit left. You have to really know what you're doing to get in there, because all the bugs are really advanced and they're really drilled down into drivers, and you have to just be be really awesome to get started. One of the great things about newer projects like this is there's still so much work being done, and there are so many aspects where you can get involved, like, you know, the graphical interface or all these little small tweaks they're making. I mean, it's great for people who are just looking to start getting involved developing an open source project.
Right, right. Great. All right. Well, let's move on from there to talk about what's coming up soon on Floss Weekly. Coming up next week, I believe, we have Jonathan Ellis talking about Cassandra, which is a highly scalable distributed database. This was originally developed by Facebook, and I remember when this first was open source, why Facebook released this in open source, and it's since been picked up by a number of very popular websites, like dig.com, I think, uses it, or they were using it. Several other, you know, very notable websites that need very fast response time in a very distributed fashion to make sure that there's no downtime or anything involved. So distributed in the fact that there's no downtime, and also in the fact that you can pull resources from multiple boxes and so forth. So we're going to be talking about Cassandra next week, which is very, very exciting. In terms of myself and what I'm up to, I will be at Oracle Open World, which is coming up in October. The first full week in October will be Oracle Open World in San Francisco. And I know with over 40,000 attendees that some people out there must be listeners of Floss Weekly and will be there. So if you want to meet me, I will be there. I'll be in the, I believe it's the South Hall in the Hardware Pavilion area. So if you come to Oracle's, Oracle should have a very big hardware display there. And if you come there, I should be over there at some point. So please stop by and introduce yourself if you happen to be there. Also, there's a few other events going on that I'll be at, but I'll save those for next time just to make sure. I've got to confirm a few things. But certainly if you're in San Francisco around Oracle Open World, take a look there. And you can also follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Google+. Just search for Aaron Newcomb, twitter.com/Aaron Newcomb, facebook.com/Aaron Newcomb, aaronnewcomb.com. And you can go to thesourceshow.org to see my other video podcast that I work on, which is occasionally updated. not very often, but when I get around to it, I do update. So go to thesourceshow.org to find updates there. Randy, where can people find more information about what you're working on?
I'm not actually working on anything at the moment, unfortunately. But if you have FreeBSD questions or any other questions you would like to ask, you can find me on Twitter as FreeBSD Girl, and Google+ if you just search for Randy Harper.
Okay, great. And I should also mention that if you want to find out more information or keep in touch with what's going on Floss Weekly, you can certainly do that by following Floss Weekly on Twitter. So we have our own Twitter handle now for Floss Weekly, just for Floss Weekly stuff, not Randall's daily schedule or what he's eating at the moment, but actually just for Floss Weekly stuff. So if you want to take a look at or follow what's going on for Floss Weekly, please do that. And you can also, there's also a poster us, I don't know if I said that right. I always say it the wrong way. But there's a PostgreSQL Floss Weekly that you can follow as well. It's kind of like our blog now. So we talk about, you know, this is confirmed for this week, this is upcoming. It allows you a chance to interact a little bit, leave comments and things like that, where it's a little bit harder to do on Twitter. So, you know, if you want to interact a little bit more and you happen to like that particular venue for getting your information, please check that out as well. So I think that'll do it for this edition of Floss Weekly. Come back and see us next time. I'm Aaron Newcomb, and we'll see you later.